Welcome to Moco's Most Famous. I am Joe Yashiroff, and we have a very special guest, which we're going to get to in one moment. But I wanted to tell you that we are coming from MyMC Media. We are near the train tracks. We're coming from a partially soundproof studio here. Mr. Kravitz, if you hear a train, you'll know. Don't worry. It's just it's outside, but it will not hit the studio and we'll be okay. I mentioned our guest, Jason.
It'll feel like home.
It will feel like home. Good. Our special guest today is Jason Kravitz. I am really excited about this podcast. Jason wasn't born in Montgomery County, but moved here when he was eight to Rockville. And he has a lot to tell us about the county, but you know him from so many shows. I'm going to do a partial list because we don't have time to do the full list, Jason. Smash, Kimmy Schmidt, 30 Rock, Grey's Anatomy, Friends, Law & Order, Everybody Loves Raymond, Yes, Dear, Gilmore Girls, Blue Bloods, The Practice, Curb Your Enthusiasm, which is my favorite show. Welcome to the show, Jason Kravitz. How are you?
Thank you, Joe. I am great. Thanks for asking.
And you're coming.
It's been cold, but other than that, I'm great.
Well, we hope you feel better. And I know you had a birthday a few days ago, and you know the rule: you can't be sick on your birthday. So you broke a rule.
I faked my way through my birthday.
Okay.
Did my best. No one knew.
So are you not a big birthday? It sounds like you're not a big birthday person.
I didn't celebrate my birthday. I expected other people to celebrate my birthday for a long time, and then you realize, you know, if you leave it up to other people, it's just not going to happen. So I started celebrating my birthday. Every year I'll do something, just gather friends or have dinner or have drinks or something like that. But this year was pretty mellow. So okay. I came, you know, right after the Memorial Day weekend. So all the partying was done.
Got it.
And people just wanted to settle in.
Okay.
It was all right. I had a very lovely birthday.
Good. Well, you're coming to us on the phone from New York, where you live, and I know you're coming to town, which is exciting. You're coming home, one of your homes, a week from Saturday, June 8th, to do a show. And I want to ask you, do you like coming home, or are you in the camp of, coming home, or are you, oh, my God,
yeah,
everybody's my best friend, and they're going to ask me for 30 tickets for every show?
Oh, no. I wish I had that many best friends that asked for tickets. No, it's always great for me coming home because I spent, you know, I lived in Montgomery County or just into D.C. from, or when I was at Maryland school at University of Maryland, I was in that area for about 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came home quite a bit. My family was there for another, I don't know, 10 years after I left and in that area. So, you know, I have friends from all walks of my life, mm-hmm, from elementary school all the way up through my professional career. And so I have friends, a lot of people that I really consider family and I miss when I'm away. So I'd love coming back to the D.C. area.
Well, we can't wait to have you come back. I'm actually going to try to come to the show a week from Saturday on June 8th. Now, that show is at AMP. It's a little confusing because it says Strathmore, but you're not at, yep, Strathmore Hall, correct?
Right, right. No, not at Strathmore Hall. It's AMP by Strathmore, which, mm-hmm, it's an extension of Strathmore. And it's at the Pike and Rose Center there in North Bethesda.
Which is a happening place.
And
now
it's a happening place for music. And my show is musical, so it fit the bill for that. It's a great place to come back to. I played there last year, and it was a lot of fun and a great space.
So now you're considered an actor, a comedian, a singer. Are you all of them? Does it matter what order? What do you consider yourself?
No, whatever they pay me for, that's how I describe it. No, I think I've prided myself over the years on trying to do as much as I can in a lot of different realms. I started out doing theater and musical theater and performing music with my family and then high school. And I did a little bit of professional work when I was a teenager in the DC area as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, my dad was heavily involved with the Montgomery Players, the community theater located at the time up in Gaithersburg area, Quince Orchard area. And so my family was heavily involved in theater there. We were always performing. We were always doing something. So I always wanted to do a little bit of everything. So I've done everything from Shakespeare to high farce to musicals, mm-hmm, and then, you know, getting involved in television and film. You know, I spent 2 years working on a drama, and then I was doing comedy. And, you know, you just have to do everything you can in this business in order to make ends meet in a way. But
sure,
I was always driven to do a little bit of everything.
Well, not only driven, but do you like doing everything, or would you like to be more focused in one realm versus another?
No, I get bored, to be honest. I like to do a little bit of everything. And I want, you know, I want to be seen doing a drama, and then I want to be involved in comedy. I want to be at the top of my game and as much as I can. I'm still, you know, I'm still actively learning, you know, pieces of this business that I'd like to be involved with, you know, studying Chekhov or studying tap dance or studying musical instruments. And I just feel like I constantly am challenging myself with new artistic endeavors in this. But this show specifically is a skill that I started developing when I was at Maryland, actually. This show is an improvised evening. So the entire show from beginning to end, it's an improvised cabaret. So all the songs, all the stories, the characters' name, everything is pulled from suggestions from the audience. So everything is a high wire act. And I started doing improv at Maryland. That was where I really got my feet wet with improv.
So most people would consider that pressure scary to do improvisation, but this is something you've done all your life, and I guess
no, they would be absolutely right. It is terrifying. I got to be honest with you, Joe. Before every show, I've been doing this for about this particular solo improv show for about 4.5 years. Every single time I do this show, I stand backstage before the show thinking, "Whose idea was this? This is a terrible idea." This will never work. You don't know what you're going to do. You don't know what you're going to sing. And so you got to make it up. And you have no one else to turn to but your band.
Right.
So, I mean, it's a real, yeah, I think I've been doing this business long enough that I think I wanted to do something scary. I wanted to do something that was different than anybody else was doing and really challenging. I found it.
You did. You certainly did.
For better or worse, I found it.
You mentioned the improv group Erasable Ink. It was called. You formed in 1986, and actually, I was going to Maryland at the time, so I probably saw you, but I can't remember what I had for breakfast today. So, so tell us about how that happened, and it's still going on. And our star intern Ambi Narula, who's an aspiring comedian, was telling me that some of her friends are in the group now, and how cool it is that you started it what 33 years ago.
33 years ago. Yeah, it was a group of us were in the theater. It was my freshman year in the theater department. And one of the actors in the theater department had a connection to a group in Yale called the Purple Crayon, which was kind of the original college improv group. They were the one that was started by the very famous Del Close of Chicago, came and taught them improv. So we're performance-based improv. There's been a lot of improv before that. Obviously, there have been years and years of improv. But this group kind of was the seminal group for the current burst of improv in the college scene and beyond. So they came down to visit us, did a workshop with us, did a performance for us, and a bunch of us got the bug and said, well, we want to do this ourselves. And we spent a good 6 months just playing with the idea before ever performing in front of an audience. And once we did, it just kept growing and growing. And, you know, it was great to be part of the beginning of it. I can't believe it's lasted this long. And when I've met people from the, you know, last 20 something years of the group, 30 years of the group, people have come up to me and said, hey, you know, thank you for doing this. You know, you and your friends really made something special that we could be part of. And I just want to tell them, listen, in all honesty, we didn't do it for you. We did it because we were show-offs and we wanted some attention and to have fun with each other. And that's what we did. And I usually turn and thank them for continuing the traditions that we started. It's kind of amazing to see that it kept going so long and still going strong.
So clearly you had no idea when you created it that it was going to be, that it was going to last, you know, maybe 2 or 3 years, much less 33.
Oh, yeah. Who knew how long it was going to last? We just had fun doing it and kept doing it. After I graduated, I think I was kind of wiped my hands of it. I was like, all right, well, whatever happens to it now, it's their problem.
That's funny.
But I'm really proud of it. I'm proud of the fact that it kept going.
You should be. Now, improv to me is my favorite kind of comedy because it's so difficult. And when it works, it is just an amazing thing. One of my favorite shows of all time is Whose Line Is It Anyway? So for those who haven't seen your act, are there any similarities to some things that we may have or people may have seen on that show?
Well, sure. I mean, anytime they did anything musical on Whose Line Is It Anyway, you saw them do different genres of music from country and western to rap to musical theater, grant, you know, Sondheim, to whatever they chose to do that week. And so this show has that kind of style. It's kind of a parody of a cabaret act or lounge act, where someone's coming out and telling the story of their life in song. But of course, the person, the story, and all the songs are made up on the spot. I think it's what's fun about it for me is I think it's a very communal thing, improv. It is a real connection between the audience who's giving these suggestions and the performance. And so people are really, it turns into a collaborative magic act in a way. It's like you watch it, you can't believe the connection was made, and you can't believe that happened the way it did and unfolded the way it did. And it seems like magic if it's done right or if it goes well.
Yeah.
But I think it's very collaborative, and that's what I enjoy about it, is it's very much connected with the audience as opposed to performing at the audience.
Sure. Now, any kind of performance, you're feeding off the audience and the energy of the audience, your act more so than others. What happens if you have kind of a lame audience and there's no energy, and how much pressure does that put on you?
Well, the good news is what happens in the show is when people walk in, I ask them to write down suggestions on a card.
Okay.
And the suggestions are not, give me a name of a song. It's usually stuff like, what was the last text you received?
Mm-hmm.
Or what's the best piece of advice you ever got? Stuff that songs could be based on. So those all are collected and put into a fishbowl. So I'm constantly reaching into the fishbowl to pull out the names of the next song. So I'll come out and say, well, we're going to start with our big hit song from our third album. You know it. I know it. It's called, and I'll pull something out of the suggestion bin, and it says, Eat Your Vegetables. And I'll say, okay, here's a song called Eat Your Vegetables. And then I have to sing a song called Eat Your Vegetables in a certain style and a certain rhymes with having make sense as a song. And, you know, I think, you know, at this point, having done the show this many years, I've probably come up with 400 to 500 songs over the course of that time. And if you took them out separately, you'd probably listen and go, that's a pretty okay song, I guess. But in the moment, when I'm making it up on the spot, it seems like the best song you ever heard. So it's always fun, just based on the fact that I don't have to worry about the audience being low-key. As long as they write suggestions down, they're going to get a fun show.
Sounds great. Now, I'm going to guess that you grew up, one of the things you watched was probably Johnny Carson.
Sure.
Who didn't, right? And they had a Stump the Band, I think, was one of the things they did.
That's familiar.
Obviously, you're influenced by, like everybody, everything that you've seen, and you take little bits. So who were the most influential comedians, actors, people in your life growing up that you kind of borrowed from, like everybody borrows?
Sure, yeah. I think for me, I tend towards parody. Like the show itself is a parody of a cabaret. The song styles are parodies of a Sondheim song or a swing number or a Mel Torme song. The fun part for me about the show is researching all the different styles and finding out what makes a song that particular style. What does a catchphrase song do? A catchphrase song would be like Somewhere Over the Rainbow, where that's the catchphrase and it's the beginning of every verse. They're all different styles of songs you could pull from. So I tend to parody those styles. So it was the parodies that drew me in when I was younger. I remember seeing the movie Airplane, 15 times in the theaters. and looking back now, I'm not sure I quite understood all the references at the time, but I enjoyed that. I enjoyed Monty Python. But the Monty Pythons that I would be drawn to are the ones that were parodies. Life of Brian, which is a parody of the biblical stories. Or Mel Brooks, I was drawn towards Young Frankenstein, a parody of Frankenstein movies. Spinal Tap was a big influence for me.
Oh, yeah.
Christopher Guest and that crowd,
To 11.
This one goes to 11. I bought the album of all their songs and memorized all their songs because their songs are such great parodies of hair metal. It is really, really some amazing stuff. And that's what influenced me the most. Even going back further, when I was growing up, my parents had an Alan Sherman album that I would listen to. And again, that's like all parodies of different songs. Most songs I didn't even know what they were parodying, but I got that it was a parody. So I think those were my strongest influences.
That is the very funny, the very talented Jason Kravitz. We're going to hear a lot more from Jason right after a short break. My name is Joe Yashroff. This is Moco's Most Famous. See you in 2 minutes.
MCM, your community media center, is making Montgomery County a great place to live through programs like 21 This Week, Montgomery County's hardest-hitting political talk show, keeps you up to date with the local political scene. Montgomery Community Media. Our middle name is Community.
Welcome back to MoCo's Most Famous. My name is Joe Yashroff, and we're coming to you from MyMC Media. We are with the very talented, the very funny, the very accomplished, the very versatile Jason Kravitz. How's that for a bio? Did I leave anything out, Jason?
I'm going to hire you as my publicist.
I'm ready.
That was impressive, actually.
I'm ready to go.
I didn't even know I was all those things, but I'll take it.
You definitely are. I've seen your stuff, and you definitely are all of those things and more. And for those that want to see Jason in person, you are in luck, because a week from this Saturday, June 8th, Jason will be in town at the AMP at the Pike and Rose in Rockville. And believe there are some tickets still available, so please go and get and see this man do a fully improvised cabaret. If you haven't seen anything like this, you are in for a treat, where the audience is Jason makes the audience part of the show. So that is pretty exciting. So I'm looking forward to being.
But no pressure. You don't have to come on
pressure.
Stage or anything.
Okay.
You're part of the show.
Okay.
Ethereally.
Ethereally, okay.
Scared off.
That's a good word.
You don't have to do anything.
Okay, no pressure. You just show up, and if
no
you want to write something on a card, you can.
That's it.
So you're not like Dice Clay. You don't pick on people and attack them personally. There's none of that, right?
No, there's no Dice Clay. There's no Don Rickles.
Right.
None of that stuff.
I actually
saw I'm always grateful for the people that even show up to my shows, so I would dare not abuse them.
I actually saw Don Rickles a few months before he died. Drove up to Pennsylvania because I figured I wouldn't have many more chances. I had seen him on the Jimmy Fallon show, and he didn't walk out. He was already sitting, so I said, oh, this is not good. And then I found out he's playing in Pennsylvania, so I dragged one of my friends up there, and we saw him, and he did not let us down. He insults with a heart, Mr. Warmth, right?
To the end, he was
yes.
He was doing the same act. He was great.
Absolutely. So, speaking of Don Rickles, can you name off some? I mean, we talked a little about it, but who were and are some of your favorite comedians?
Oh gosh, that's a tough one for me, because stand up. When you talk comedians, I usually think stand up, and stand up for me is elusive. That's the one art form that I, a performance art form that I stay away from. I find it. That I find terrifying, and I have great friends who do it and do it with aplomb. I guess if I had to pick, I think Andy Kaufman always was interesting to me, because he was taking this form that had been around for a while, and there were some of the greats that preceded him in that form, and then he messed with it. He took it to a different level, a very meta level, and even though it was somewhat hostile for him, what he was doing, I always found it really entertaining. As far as comedians that did stand up, but I think were better known for other things, Billy Crystal was always a touchstone for me. As a matter of fact, recently I kind of discovered that a lot of the comedy that I do is actually what I'm calling third generation. I'm imitating Billy Crystal, imitating other people from the golden age of the Borscht Belt. And I realized a lot of my comedy stylings come directly from him. And I got very lucky. I got to do a workshop of a new piece with him just a couple weeks ago. And I got to tell him that, which was
That's
a thrill
great.
For me. Really enjoyed working with him. But he was a real touchstone for me.
He was he is an all-timer. I wanted to ask you your philosophy. Now, you do not work blue, as they say in comedy, correct?
Yeah, I don't. It's not a real choice. It's not my style, I guess.
What is your philosophy? I mean, do you laugh at comedians who do work blue? Are you offended by it? Okay.
Well, it depends. I mean, I think there are some people who work blue and it really works for them. I don't like people who work blue for an easy laugh.
Right.
Like there's a comedian that was very popular in the 90s and early 2000s. He's still around and he's really great. His name is David Tell. He had a show called Insomniac, I think, on like MTV years ago.
Right.
And David Tell, he only works blue. That's pretty much all he does. But he's a genius comedian. He's a comic's comic. As a friend of mine said, he throws away jokes that other people would die to have. as they're opening. So he's one of those people I think is really, you know, obviously he's great at what he does, and I really respect it. I got no problem with people working blue. It's just never been my style. I don't feel comfortable there. And I think that there are a lot of people who work blue because it's easy.
Yep, it is.
And then I get turned off and say, you know, don't do that. You know, there's other things you could do that are better than that. You don't have to, you know, resort to that. It's an easy laugh.
Sure.
So those are the people. That's the reason I work blue is because I don't work blue is because I think it's easy.
Okay.
And that's just not who I am.
One of the all-time greats, one of my favorites, Jerry Seinfeld, obviously doesn't and never worked blue. So John Mulaney, who I kind of consider a latter-day Jerry Seinfeld, does not work blue. So you can be funny without using naughty words. So But
I got no problem with people who do if it fits their style and it's not done for an easy laugh, but it's just not who I am.
Okay. What is it about comedians?
Some ways, that's caused a problem at times in my career, I have to say, when I've been writing sketch comedy and things like that, taking it out to Hollywood, and people go, yeah, it's just not edgy. It's very funny. It's just not edgy. And I go, oh, yeah. The old edgy. I've never been edgy. You can ask anybody I went to high school with. I was not an edgy kid. I was very soft around the edges.
Yes. What is it about comedians that many of them make good actors? You're a really good actor, dramatic and comedic. I know there's a simple answer to this, but what is it about that?
You know, I'll be honest with you. I don't think that's necessarily true.
Okay.
I think there are a lot of comedians who are terrific actors. But there's a lot of more than that.
Okay.
You know, and there's all really great actors who will be terrible stand-up comics.
Uh-huh.
It's a different skill set. And I think that, but I would guess, I mean, I'm not a stand-up, so it's very hard for me to say, but I would guess the ones that are successful at making that transition are the comics that are the most honest in their comedy, the most honest in how they write and how they create and how they talk to an audience, because I think that is what is the demand of a good actor.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be open and honest and not afraid to show what you're bringing to the table. So that would be my guess. I can't speak from experience just because I don't I don't do stand up.
Now, you say you don't do stand up. So if you had to do stand up, would you be good? Could you become a good stand up comedian?
I think I could become one. But there's a whole process to that that I've had a lot of conversations with friends of mine who are stand ups about this. And you have to develop a style. You have to develop, I know how to deliver a joke. I'm a good anecdotal storyteller. Mm-hmm. I can remember, you know, jokes and tell them well, like a lot of people. But I think getting in front of an audience and being able to balance what you do with their responses, it's probably the most vulnerable position to put yourself in.
Yep.
And I think I would have to work at it for a while. I think that's a lifetime of experience becoming a good comic. And if you start young, you have a better shot at it. Starting now, it would take me a while to really learn those ropes.
Mm-hmm.
They're very different.
Okay. Now, we talked about you growing up in Montgomery County. Montgomery County has had so many amazing – we're going to talk about your experiences. But the people that have come out of Montgomery County just off the top of my head, although I'm looking at a list, so I'm really not off the top of my head.
Nobody's. Nobody's. I'm telling you right now, they're nobody.
Dave Chappelle, nobody.
Nobody.
Daniel Stern, nobody. Goldie Hawn.
What the heck's he done?
Nobody.
Goldie Hawn, I've heard of her.
Yeah. Tommy Davidson, who we had on the show a couple of weeks ago. Nobody.
Yeah,
Lewis Black, another nobody. And this is just a partial list.
Yeah.
So how is it that Montgomery County, that's a big county, it's a rich county, it's a diverse county, but you wouldn't think that Montgomery County would be such a funny county, but yet it is. Why?
Yes. Lake Needwood. That's the answer. Something in the water filtration, Lake Needwood is funny, and it just dribbles down into the whole Rock Creek system, and I think that must be the answer.
Lake Needwood, that is so funny.
Lake Needwood, write it down. You'll hear about it in future scientific reports on comedy.
Lake Needwood, I'm writing it down
in the water.
As you said.
Yeah.
So you were obviously aware of some of these people being here when you were here or before you or after you. So do you know most of these folks, some of them?
I don't know. I knew Lewis Black was from the area.
Mm-hmm.
Wanda Sykes, I think, was not from – she was from
That's
D.C.,
right.
Not from Montgomery County. But I worked with Wanda several years ago. I met Lewis many times. He's a very – a very New York character that I run into a lot, and he's a very lovely guy. But no, nobody else really I've crossed paths with from Maryland that that has moved on to that level of celebrity.
One show that I mentioned on your long list of credits, Curb Your Enthusiasm, my favorite show. You did a Curb. Was it just one, or did you do a few?
I just did one. You know, Larry went to Maryland.
Yes, I know. Isn't that amazing? Go Terps.
Yeah.
So what we've heard about how the show works. There is no actual script, but there's sort of a skeleton. Can you tell us kind of how it works?
Sure. When you go to the audition, you're not given much. You're given a little slip of paper that describes the scene you're going to play with Larry, or in the scene, whoever he was with. And then you go in and you improvise the scene. If they like you, you get called to the set. You're not given a script. You're not given anything else. You are told what the scene is. And then Larry will read out, usually it's Larry, reads out a little paragraph about what happens in the scene. You know, so it'll be like, okay, you guys come in. I talk to you about this. Then I'm going to go over here and I talk to these guys about the car. And then we all go in here for dinner and she stops me on the way to talk about this. Great. So, okay, let's place everybody where we think they're going to be. And then we're going to do what's called the blah, blah rehearsal. Because they don't want you to say anything till the cameras are rolling.
Okay.
So the blah, blah rehearsal is just so the cameras know where to go.
Uh-huh.
So then it'll be, I walk in the door, blah, 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 blah. I talk to you. I walk all the way over here, blah, blah, blah. We have this conversation, blah, blah, blah. You leave. I walk back over here, blah, blah, blah. And then you shoot it.
Wow.
The director who, when I shot it, was Bob Weedy, who's directed most of the episodes. He came up to me and said, now I just want to warn you. If you do everything well, and we like what you did, no one will say anything. If we don't like what you did, someone will say something to you. I will, or Larry will, and ask you to do something different. Don't take it personally. It's just that we want to see something different. You didn't do anything wrong. We're just going to redo it.
Okay.
That's it. And wow. True to form, when I finished my first scene, Larry stopped right in the middle of it and said, no, don't talk about that. Don't talk about that. I don't want to hear about that. That's too much. Too much. Do this instead. Okay. So did the second take. I did exactly what he wanted me to do, just kind of improvised the scene but cut out the thing he didn't want me to talk about. And they were like, okay, moving on. There was no good job. There was no, I like what you did. There was nothing. And
wow.
And I knew, but you know, by the end of the week and a half that I was working on the show, it became very natural.
Mm-hmm.
And working with just greats like, you know, Bob Einstein, who,
yes,
you know, Super Dave
Bob,
Osborne,
yeah,
who I also admired when I was a kid, working with him and his particular quirkiness and Jeff and his particular quirkiness and Larry, it was just, you got to relax. I got to work with Larry Miller, who, if you remember, was
yes,
a terrific
oh
comedian back in the 80s, 90s. And he and I played kind of best friends during this episode. And he was very relaxed. He's a terrific guy. So
I remember
that was a lot of fun.
I remember the five stages of drunkenness from Larry Miller. I know he's done a lot of stuff,
yes.
That was very good. And then he was in Best in Show, one of those. You mentioned Bob Einstein, who unfortunately left us in the last few months.
He did.
Some people don't know who his brother is. It's Albert Brooks. And you say, well, Albert Brooks and Bob Einstein, they're brothers. So how did that work? Well, so Albert Brooks was born Albert Einstein, which I'm not sure why the parents decided to name their kid Albert Einstein. I thought that was a little mean of them.
Well, it was not mean. It's hopeful.
Well, you can't say he's no Albert Einstein.
Albert Einstein. That's it.
He's no Albert Einstein. Well, actually, he is an Albert Einstein.
Well, actually, he is Albert Einstein. Thank you very much. Exactly.
All right. So let's talk about Montgomery County a little more. So
yes,
I read something about the Green Acres Camp in Rockville. What happened at Acres Camp? What kind of stuff
did you do? What
happened
in Green Acres
Camp? What happened, Jason?
Somebody stuck that on my Wikipedia page. That was just a summer gig that I was doing after college, a couple of years before I moved to New York. So I was basically a camp counselor in taught theater.
Mm-hmm.
But that also included doing the welcome opening ceremonies every day, which took place in a little gully in the woods at Green Acres Camp, where they called it Gully. They called it Gully. Everybody's going to the gully. And then I became Gully Man. I was the Gully Man. So I got this nickname of Gully Man for the summer. And I did that a couple summers in a row where I would work with kids, mostly elementary to middle school age kids and teach drama. And then I'd play songs and we'd do funny things and sketches in the mornings and just worked with a bunch of fun people. And it was a good summer gig for an actor, you know?
All right. Now we're going to fast forward to Magruder High School. What are your memories of Magruder?
Fast forward, you got to rewind to get to Magruder.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah, I was working there in my 20s at Green Acres Camp.
Oh,
When I went to summer camp, it was the Montgomery County Summer School for the Performing Arts, mm-hmm. which was just a fantastic program where creative kids from all over the county would go to different schools. I remember one summer was at Einstein High School, speaking of Einstein.
Ah.
Does that still exist, Einstein High School? It was at Einstein High School, and you'd go every day. It was a day camp. And you'd study your major, which for me was theater. And I worked with a terrific guy named Michael Lewis, who was a drama teacher at Walter Johnson. And he left us too early mm-hmm. years ago. And then you worked on your minors, which were, you had to do a part of dance and instrumental music and vocal music. And you had to participate in all those things. And it was just a great experience for me. It was the first time I did Shakespeare. It was the first time I did dance. It was really important to me, actually. And it was brought to you by Montgomery County Public Schools, which was a fantastic system. So then I went to elementary school at Laytonsville Elementary School mm-hmm. up on 108. Then I went to Redland Middle School, which was across the street from my house, directly across the street from my house. And then Magruder High School. Down the block, where I started doing, I was already doing a little bit of theater with my family, but this is when I really, and I had done a little bit of professional stuff in the area. I did a show called Powerhouse, which was a 16-episode PBS series when mm-hmm. I was about 14. And then I moved to Magruder and started working with the prolific and just retired Michael Deanna, who taught at Blake and Magruder. And I think he really instilled a love for the theater in a way that I had already started to grow in me, and my whole family was involved. My older sister, Marcy, was an accompanist and still is in the area as an accompanist
nice.
For a lot of theater, musical theater. My younger brother, Garth, and my younger sister, Vicky, were all involved in the theater program at Magruder. And, you know, it was very clear that we were expected not just to perform, but to be involved in every aspect of what it means to be a part of a theater community, which means we had to pull nails out of boards, and we had to paint, and we had to be there to build sets, and we had to hang lights. And so the cast and the crew really overlapped and became a unit. And he really taught how theater could be a family in that situation and how important it was to work mm-hmm. together. So give him a lot of credit for instilling that in my world.
Yeah. And then it was off to University of Maryland. We touched on that and the group you started, Erasable Ink. So what are your memories from Maryland? They were the best 7 years of my life, I can tell you. But what memories do you have from Maryland in addition to Erasable Ink?
Well, I made a point. I wanted to live on campus mm-hmm. the entire time. I didn't want to live off campus and commute in. I got lucky enough to get a little cash or, you know, a little scholarship money to help me out with that. So I was able to do it. And partially because I wanted to be able to go to class and then come home and then go back out to do theater. And that was harder to do if you were off campus. That's kind of why I still live in Manhattan, okay. because I like being able to come home in between auditions, shows, whatever else I'm doing. I like to be able to come home and, you know, change out of the suit and into the jeans or whatever, mm-hmm. or vice versa. Although I did make it a point not to live with actors when I was there.
Okay.
I lived with engineers. So I get away from the my lovely, crazy friends who were doing theater. But that was a great experience for me, partially because I had great instructors, including Ron O'Leary, who passed away 10 years ago. I don't even know how many years ago now, longer than that. And Mitchell Hebert, who is still teaching there and runs a department. I believe he runs the MFA program, but he also is a consistently working actor and director in Washington, D.C., and just a wealth of talented people to learn from and challenge me. But also, because it was a theater program and not a conservatory program, it left a lot of breathing room to participate in things that you wanted to develop yourself. And so one of those things, I did a lot of things like that, but one of those things was Erasable Ink and the improv group. And I think that, as much as I learned from going to school there as an actor, I also was able to learn how to be an entrepreneur in a way, to develop to not sit around and wait for things to come to you. You had to really chase them. and create them. And that's definitely played a role in most of my life experiences, including this show.
Amazing.
So that was important to me.
Yeah. Now, I want to fast forward a bunch. Last year, you went back to Magruder. I'm sure you've been back before, but last year you delivered the commencement speech, and if I may say, a memorable commencement speech because you quoted from your valedictorian speech. Only one problem, though, Jason, if you could share with our listeners, with the valedictorian speech that you quoted.
I was not valedictorian. But I had a speech prepared in case I was.
Just
so I was
in
your
case.
Valedictorian. You know, I would have been valedictorian if it wasn't for, you know, my GPA and, you know, things like that.
Uh-huh.
I could have been.
You could have been a contender.
No, I had a really great experience. It was great. You know, it was. I graduated on a cornfield, you know, on Muncaster Mill Road.
Yeah.
So that area has, there are no cornfields left. There were horses in the background when I graduated on that field. And, it wasn't long after that that they moved the ceremonies down into Washington to Constitution Hall.
Right.
So I got the benefit of being at my school when I graduated. I got benefit, I guess. But going back to speak and talk to kids that are, you know, nowhere near born when I was graduating. First of all, it was lucky for me that I had one of the teacher in charge of the senior class was my classmate from the 80s.
Really?
So that's how I think I got the gig. I got to know somebody on the inside.
Absolutely.
No, it was great to go back and give people, you know, I don't know what advice I really have to give. I guess the biggest advice I gave was, don't worry about it. You're going to figure it out on your own. You'll forget what I have to say for sure. Just take a breath and you'll be fine. And parents, support your kid, because no matter what track they take right now, even if they veer off that track into something else, it'll be really important for them to follow what they're passionate about now.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll figure it out down the road. And which is advice I'm giving to my kid right now. He's 17.
Oh, wow.
About to graduate in a year, so I've been thinking about these graduation speeches a lot.
Going to Maryland, I hope.
He doesn't want to go anywhere near where I went.
I don't blame him. Oh, well.
Why don't you look at Maryland? No, Dad, I want to go where you went. That's typical teenage behavior.
Jason, what are you most proud of? I know that's like a Barbara Walters question, but from your career, if you had to pick one thing that somebody forced you to pick, one thing that you're most proud of, what would that be?
Wow, that's a really tough one. I think, that's a tough one, Joe. I would say that if there are a couple things that I'm really proud of. One is, I have to say, I look back at my time and right after college, working at Roundhouse Theater when I was just starting out as an actor. I also participated a lot in their outreach programs, doing theater for kids in the morning and doing outreach programs with, you know, teaching theater to kids from a variety of socioeconomic backgrounds all over the county. You know, kids that were taken out of their homes to kids who were living in, you know, fancy pants homes. And the work I got to do with those kids and just getting them to be able to express themselves, I think was a proud moment for me. And I got to write and direct and perform and participate and teach. I still look back on that as, you know, when I moved to New York, it became really difficult to get involved with those programs and sustain life as an actor. So I had to take a step back from that. But I think that was really important to me. So that was important. And then the other thing is just a culmination of a variety of things, how my business is, how my career took off the way it did.
Mm-hmm.
It was very different from anybody else's, and it should be. It's, everybody's got a different path in this career. But I did not go to a conservatory school. I didn't go to a graduate school. Working in Washington, D.C. was my graduate school. So a lot of things that came to other kids, agents and managers and connections, were not as available to me. So I had to forge my own alliances, and I had to forge my own career by doing my own material and getting myself out there. And I think that's what I'm most proud of, is that I found ways of expressing myself, even though sustaining in this business this long is a success story for me.
Sure.
You know, so just still being around and still performing,
mm-hmm.
and still, you know, participating, is, I'm proud of that, I think.
All right, so last couple of questions, not to get too philosophical. Mm-hmm. So you picked a profession, especially the part where you're on stage and you're doing improvisation. One of the hardest things you could possibly do, not microbiology type hard, but in another sense, it's so hard to just put yourself out there, you know, every night. But it's also one of the most important in the sense that making people laugh, making them forget about their problems, what's going on in the world. How often do you think of that, or do you try not to think of that and just do your job because that's too big to think about?
Well, let's go deep here, shall we?
Let's do it. Let's do it.
I do think about it because sometimes I look at what I'm doing and I say, what's the point?
Mm-hmm.
With everything going on in the world, I think, shouldn't my energies be focused elsewhere? And I thought about that a lot because I'm as politically aware and socially aware as the next guy, and especially this day and age where it's very in your face all the time. And so it's very hard to say, oh, I'm just going to do this show and have fun, and that'll be my contribution. But it occurred to me, listening to other people in other professions talk about where they are politically and with their work, that we all have a role to play. We all have to do what we're good at and what we are strong, our strong suits are, and follow that path. And it's not for us to judge, you know, what effect that has.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really think about, oh, I'm taking people away from their troubles. I think about, okay, you know what? I'm good at this. I like doing this. I think it's infectious. I think people like to enjoy themselves, and they'll have a good time if they come to my show. I'm going to put that out there. I don't know if it'll change the world, if it has an effect on somebody on a daily basis, mm-hmm. or just for that moment or for a lifetime, but that's not for me to say anymore. So yeah, I think that's where I sit philosophically on that. On the other hand, I have to say that when you were talking about what's hard about this business, getting up there and putting yourself out there, that's the easy part.
Okay.
Actually, I had a friend, I had a teacher say to me, you know, auditioning is your job, acting is your vacation.
Ah.
And it's true. I would rather be participating, performing, doing any, that's my favorite part about this business.
Okay.
The hard part, the mental difficulty, the thing that you could be proud of, you know, with, you know, sustaining and getting through is daily, hourly, sometimes rejection, disappointment, frustration, guessing games. You know, I've been in this business for 30 something years, and every year I have no idea what's going to come into the bank. I have, when people say, what's your average salary? I'm like, which year? Which year? You went to the one closer to zero? Because
mm-hmm.
that one's really recent. So you just never know. And so it's very hard to make plans for things. So that's been a gift over the years, because as hard as that part has been, and that part is the hardest part, the mentally and emotionally sustaining yourself to do this job in the downtimes, that's been the gift, because it makes you self-reflective. It makes you ask yourself the questions. Why am I doing this? Mm-hmm. Why am I still putting myself out there for this particular thing? How long can I do this? Is it worth it? And you have to really understand where you're coming from. And that's been work that I've done and work that I've been happy to continue doing.
Very interesting perspective from Jason Kravitz, who's going to be in town on June 8th for a show at the AMP at the Pike and Rose. So I wanted to ask you this, I think will be the last question.
What did Tommy Davidson say to that question? I want to know.
Oh, you know what? I'm trying to remember, because I did ask him that.
I'll go listen to it.
You have to listen to the podcast. You have to listen to the podcast.
That's good enough.
Do you know about the beginning of his life? It's unbelievable.
I don't know.
Oh, my gosh. So
I'll go listen to it.
Basically,
everyone should go listen to that.
Found near a trash can, adopted, and then,
we have very similar to mine, Steve. So then, not at all.
One of the things we talked about with him was that comedy oftentimes comes from darkness. I don't know if you know what, you probably don't have time to get into that, but I did want to ask you a question about advice for young aspiring comedians, comedy writers. You know, a lot of people are funny, a lot of people think they're funny, a lot of people think they're going to be the next big thing. What do you tell those people?
The best advice I've ever gotten, and the best advice I can give, is just get yourself involved with as much as possible, with as many people as possible, creatively, with other people that you admire or other people that share similar values to you and your styles and your creativity. Get involved with people who are excited about what they do, and you will find a path for yourself. I know a lot of people that started out as actors in this business that met people through the work that they were doing or the pursuit of the work that they were doing and found completely different careers for themselves in things that are incredibly fulfilling for them and they were meant to do. So you never know where it's going to lead you, mm-hmm. but just get involved with as many people as possible. That way you have those connections, that inspiration, that challenge, that competition, whatever it is that drives you. That's the advice I can give.
Great advice from the very talented, the very funny, the very versatile Jason Kravitz. I'm not reading. I'm just saying that because I believe that based on what I've seen from your work. And I can't wait
you're
to
see. You're going to have to come see for yourself on Saturday the 8th. That's the only way to know for sure if Joe's telling the truth.
If I was on the fence, I am now not on the fence. I will be there, Jason. I will be there laughing and clapping and maybe writing some things on a note card. And the show is June 8th, once again, at the Amp at the Pike and Rose in Rockville. You should definitely come out. This is definitely something that you're not used to seeing, fully improvised cabaret. I don't think I've ever used those words, so I don't think there are a whole lot of people out there who do that. And it's going to be a great show. Jason, cannot thank you enough for your time that you spent with us today. Really, really, really thank you for that.
Oh, my pleasure, Joe. I had a great time.
And we'll see you next Saturday. Thank you, Jason. I want to thank our engineer, Carolyn Raskauskas, our intern, Ambika Narula, who's going to be the next Jason Kravitz, like in 20 years, Ambika?
We'll see.
Okay.
I'll be done by then. I'll pass the baton.
Absolutely. Remember the name, Ambika Narula and Carolyn Raskauskas as well. Thank you, Jason Kravitz. Thank you, everybody, for listening to MoCo's Most Famous. I'm Joe Yashroff, and we will see you next time. We'll be right back.